On the air, online, from New York City, border to border, and coast to coast, you're connected with Tom Sullivan.
Yes, you are, and thank you for coming by. Very busy Monday. Today is the third day of May, year of our Lord 2021. My name is Tom Sullivan. So, gosh, we got so much to go through. So much to go through. I thought we'd pull a little bit from the Sunday morning shows yesterday, because there was a... There was a Tim Kaine, who is the chief of staff for Joe Biden. He has been the right-hand guy of Joe Biden in the Senate, when he was vice president, and now as president. That's why he got named chief of staff. And so Biden's got a bunch. This is why I get scratching my head here. I was talking last week about this, about... This isn't the old Senator Joe Biden. This is a new direction. They're much, much, much further to the left. And so it was interesting, because the host on Face the Nation was asking Tim Kaine the question that I was so happy he asked the question. So he's talking to him about this, and he's talking to him about that, and about... And Kaine kept just answering whatever, no matter what the question was. He kept saying, oh, our $1.9 trillion deal is going to be great, our $2.3 trillion deal. They're all going to, oh, for the people and all that. And so finally they came to the question about, hey, you got all this spending. Is there anything in there to cut spending?
With a government plan that is this big, is the president going to offer any spending cuts at all?
First of all, I think people have watched their government deliver 220 million COVID shots in 100 days. They've watched us deliver a rescue plan that took this economy that was dead in the water 100 days ago and created more new jobs in the president's first 100 days than any president in history has created in his first 100 days. So I think what the public is seeing is that America is on the move again. And these common sense measures to give people some help with their child care, to give people some money, a tax cut to help raise their kids, is the kind of common sense action they want to see this country take now.
I didn't hear an answer on spending cuts, but we're going to move on.
Yeah, I didn't either. I did not either. He asked him specifically. I wish he wouldn't. I love the fact he asked the question, but he should have said, I did not hear an answer on spending cuts. You want to try it again, Mr. Kaine? Not a peep about it, other than we're giving money for this, we're giving money for that. And that is what people are listening to. They're going, I'm going to get money. We qualify. We got children now. Sounds like we're going to get some more money. This is great. We got all these programs. The government is there to give us more money. I'm not going to think past my nose on it, but look at this guy's talking about more money. People did not hear the question about, are there any spending cuts? That's sacrilegious language. You don't talk about spending cuts when you're in Washington, D.C. I'm glad he asked a question, but I was so disappointed he did not pin him, because Tim Kaine knows that there are no spending cuts, and he was not. He's been around Washington a long time, and all you do is you just keep spending the gifts that you're going to give the taxpayers. Now, a lot of you have been through many administrations that have promised you the moon, the sun, and the stars. And you haven't been the recipient of anything. But you keep falling for the same trick. It's like Charlie Brown in the football. Lucy keeps talking Charlie Brown into kicking that football, and every time she pulls the same stunt. That's what this is. Every time they tell you, we're going to give you this, we're going to give you that, we're going to give you all this money. Now, reality is, number of people have gotten money. They did get those first checks out, and the first checks were coming while Donald Trump was still in office. And now they're trying to pony on with even bigger ones. But all these other things, and this whole business about infrastructure is not an infrastructure bill. You know that, right? You do know that. It's about everything but infrastructure. There may be a road repair somewhere, but they've been repairing roads even though they haven't funded, wink, wink, infrastructure. You still see road repair crews out there. How does that work? Then there was another Tim Scott. Senator Tim Scott was on Face the Nation yesterday as well. And I thought this was salient because they brought up qualified immunity for police. And I've had a couple police officers call and disagree with me on this. There, in most places, I don't know if it's federal, but I'm sure in if not all states, many, many states, there is something called qualified immunity, where if a police officer does something in the line of duty, then you can't hold them personally liable. There are lots of carve-outs about liability in the law regarding lots of different people, lots of different things. Airlines have special carve-outs. There's lots of different rules. So they came along with police reform, and the Democrats were absolutely sticking to their guns that staying focused on the fact that they want qualified immunity for police officers to go away as part of the anti-police movement in a lot of legislative bodies. So the police have said, no, we're doing dangerous stuff and people get hurt. Whether they get a broken arm or they fall and skin their knees or they get shot and killed, I don't want to be sued. If I'm going to be a police officer, I got to have some protection. My point has always been, they never really sue the officer, so to me it's kind of moot. They always sue the city, the county, or the state for which the officer works. And because that's where the deep pockets are. And any lawyer will tell you they're going for the deep pockets. They're not going for some officer's bank account. But that's the sticking point on trying to get some of this criminal justice reform done. So Tim Scott was asked about specifically, what about that qualified immunity for police?
What we want to do is make sure that the bad apples are punished, and we've seen that through convictions from Michael Slager in 2015 when he shot Walter Scott in the back, and to recently just last several days on the George Floyd convictions. Those are promising signs, but the real question is, how do we change the culture of policing? I think we do that by making the employer responsible for the actions of the employee. We do that with doctors, we do that with lawyers, we do that in most all of our industries. And if we do that in law enforcement, the employer will change the culture. So as opposed to having one officer change or not change, we'll have all officers transforming because the departments are taking on more of that burden. And frankly, as I spoke with the family members on Thursday, they were very receptive to that proposal because what they're looking for is something that shows progress. I think that does it.
No, they're looking for a check. This won't change anything, but this is what makes Tim Scott interesting to me. He is looking for the right words to get everybody to buy into something that's common sense. The cities or the counties or the states will still be sued, and the police officers will be given exemption by their employer. It's the way it works right now. That's the way it works in almost every place. If you are doing something on the job and somebody gets hurt because of your actions on the job, that includes driving to work, driving home from work. You get in a car accident in many states. You're on the clock. You're on the job. And the employer has a liability. That's why businesses carry tons of liability insurance that cover exactly these things. And I am absolutely positive that every city and county and state out there has all kinds of indemnification insurance for police officers. So I still, even though some police have said, no, we need that protection, you're already protected. But I don't know if you would feel better if they actually put some words in there saying your employer is responsible, not you. They're looking for money. They're not looking at your bank account. I don't know. Maybe you are a Rockefeller descendant and you're a police officer somewhere and you're worth $50 million, $500 million. But you love being a police officer. I don't know. There might be one out there. Most police officers are not wealthy people. They make a good living. They do an extremely dangerous job. But they're not the ones that they're going for when it comes to some of these lawsuits. So they're, I don't know, police, are you okay with language that would put in employer is responsible for your actions? I thought they already were. I think they are. But if Tim Scott wants to move the words around to make it sound better to you, hallelujah. They can get that through, and then they can move on with that. Tim Scott's trying to get things done. And he runs into these silly arguments from people on the other side of the aisle that shot down his entire police reform package over that, which is, I think, a phony in my book. So we've got that. We've got Tony Blinken is talking as well. I got some more Ron Klain, some of the Sunday morning show stuff. Tony Blinken, for those of you who don't know, is our Secretary of State. Did you hear Hillary came out over the weekend and was saying, you know, taking these troops out of Afghanistan, that's not a good idea. So Hillary is in the is disagreeing with Joe Biden, along with all of his generals are disagreeing with Joe Biden about bringing everybody home, what's left from Afghanistan. So we've got Afghanistan. We've got a little bit of the border. We've got, we'll do it together right after we take this short break.
Stop yelling at the radio and get on the phone now. You're with Tom Sullivan.
Yeah, there's a lot to discuss about what they were talking about over the weekend. Let me play, because this will lead right into what you want to talk about, Lisa. But this is Tony Blinken, Cut 17, when was he on? This was on 60 Minutes. Yeah, and I about fell over, and I think Nora O'Donnell just about did, too. He said, China... Yeah, we're not actually trying to contain them. Let's listen.
It is the one country in the world that has the military, economic, diplomatic capacity to undermine or challenge the rules-based order that we care so much about and are determined to defend. But I want to be very clear about something, and this is important. Our purpose is not to contain China, to hold it back, to keep it down. It is to uphold this rules-based order that China is posing a challenge to. Anyone who poses a challenge to that order, we're going to stand up and defend it.
I know you say the goal is not to contain China, but have you ever seen China be so assertive or aggressive militarily?
No, we haven't. I think what we've witnessed over the last several years is China acting more repressively at home and more aggressively abroad. That is a fact.
What's China's goal?
I think that over time, China believes that it can be and should be and will be the dominant country in the world.
There you go. So his view of China is, no, we don't want to contain it. We don't want to hold it back. We don't want to keep it down. And their goal is to be the biggest, most powerful country in the world. That's how he sees China. I was pretty startled by that. Lisa in Kansas City. Hi, Lisa. Where have you been? I've missed you. How are you?
I'm doing fine, doing fine. Yeah, okay. I find that interesting because, I mean, this is a question, you know, we talk about all our spending, but I mean, isn't China spending just all kinds of money in their, whatever it is, their road and bridge and 20, in all of their development? I mean, are we, if we're competing with them, are they getting themselves into so much debt that they can't pull our debt? I don't understand how all this happens. That's why I'm asking you, Tom.
Well, their system is so dramatically different. First of all, we don't know how much debt they carry. But secondly,
right,
is that they can have millions of people assigned to a work project and pay them next to nothing. Their labor rules are so abhorrent to what we abide by, but that's where we have that value, and they don't. They just don't have that value. That doesn't make them any. I mean, it puts them on a different course. That we're not. Maybe that's what Blinken was talking about, is that we're not trying to compete with them. Well, yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Why can't we try to contain them? But he's kind of giving that up and going, yeah, it's okay. Could you imagine a baseball team saying, you know, yeah, we don't have anybody on first base or second base. We're only going to put somebody on third base because we're just not going to try and stop them at first or second.
Well,
what's the point?
And these computer chips, you know, they've got the market on these computer chips that we need now. And that's
big time.
I saw, was that? Yeah. And, you know, we need to excel there. So anyway, well, I thought you would know of all people, Tom. So that's why I had to ask you.
Well, I don't know. But nobody knows their books.
Nobody
they make stuff up and they put it out in press releases.
Yeah.
But we really don't know. I know China has momentum, and they've got a system that they can try to become the biggest. And Blinken sounded like he was basically going, yeah, that looks like what's going to happen. He's not trying to push back. What bothers me is we still have the tariffs. Biden has not taken the tariffs off, and I thought they were bad in the first place, and they're still there. They're not doing a darn thing other than costing us more money. Anyway, I got to hit a bottom of the hour break, but it's good to hear from you, Lisa. I hope all is well. Phone number here is 855-295-6600. Anybody can answer the China debt question. I would love to hear it.
Amendment 101. You're listening to Tom Sullivan.
Yes, you are. Happy Monday to you. Been going over a little bit of some of the things on the Sunday shows yesterday I wanted to talk to you about. But let's go back to last hour. Mike in Nevada, another former San Quentin guard. Is that right?
Hello, you can hear me.
Yes.
Former resident of San Quentin.
Oh, resident. Oh, you. Oh.
Yeah.
That's you but live there.
25 years ago. Yeah, that was for a short period.
I'll bet it was. So, What do you make? What do you make of all these prisoners being let go? You served your time, I take it.
I did, and I learned my lesson. I made a very successful life afterwards, yada, yada. I met tens of thousands of amazing people in there that did not deserve to be there. California has turned their prison system into a revolving door machine of money. That's all it is.
How so? Explain that. How does it turn a revolving door of money?
Slight fraction. Well, they make it so easy. They set you up for failure. For instance, here's one example. If you end up in Susanville State Prison in California, when they release you for your parole, they drop you off in Reno, Nevada at a bus station. That's an automatic parole violation. As soon as you report to your parole officer within 24 hours like you're supposed to, first thing he does is tell you to put your hands behind your back. You were out of state, parole violation. And you go right.
So they drop you off. No. They don't drop you off out of state on purpose. Something else happened. I mean, they release them out the front door.
But it's one of those things, if the parole officer has history with you, that is reason enough to violate you. Anyway, but that's not why I called. The point I was getting at is, like I said, there's many people, the majority, well, maybe not the majority, I'd say maybe a third of the inmates in California are not there for the crime they originally committed. They're there for a parole violation. That was the point I was trying to get at.
But a parole violation is because they committed a crime and they were given parole.
Not necessarily.
Right?
Well, yes.
You don't give people parole that haven't committed a crime. You got to go through the justice system, and a judge either sends you to jail, fines you, or puts you on parole. You got to have a crime involved.
Myself clear here. I must not be being clear enough here. No, when you get released on parole, like all of these inmates, I'm hoping will be. You know, I'm assuming they will have to serve their parole time to be released early. That's still anywhere from 3 years to a minimum of 13 months if you program excellently and your parole officer deems you fit to live in society. He could release you off parole in 13 months. That's typically not the case, unfortunately, because most of these people are drug addicts. And they relapse.
But they've been in prison. So other than contraband, they have not had... They should have gotten the drugs out of their system by the time they're released, right?
Yeah.
Other than contraband.
And then you get released. You're back with your old circles. You don't have the willpower.
Yes.
I'm not making excuses for
you. I'm hoping No. I agree with you. I agree that the system, when they get pushed out the front door and they've got their $200 in their pocket and they're left there to make life for themselves, that... It's difficult. It's hard. And the easiest thing, even if you're trying to go straight, is this is impossible. I think I'll call up my old buddy who I used to sell drugs with and get back into that business because I can make some money there. I get that.
Well, it's not even.
I understand it.
I used to sell drugs with. It's, you know what? I haven't seen my mother in 13 years. Yeah, I'll have a glass of wine. And then you get a knock on the door. It happens to be your parole officer. Damn it. Bust it. Just bad timing.
You're watering this down. Come on, Mike. You're watering this way down. They don't bust you for having a glass of wine with your mother. Come on.
Okay.
Not unless there's other stuff going on. Well, one of the things that you learned in prison was to play the game, to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get out, why don't you just continue to play the game with the parole officer until your parole is over?
That's a good question. That methodology worked out just fine for me.
Good. Yeah, I mean, tell them what they want to hear. Do what they say, and... You know, eventually they're out of your hair. How long have you been out?
about all these guys about 25 years.
Oh, good. Good for you. Good for you. So what percentage of the population in San Quentin would you feel comfortable living on your block?
I'm going to honestly say, out of the five institutions that I was a resident in my one stint, I've met easily 10,000 individuals there. And I cannot think of a single one off the top of my head that I wouldn't allow to house, sit, and watch my children.
Really?
Really. So long as they're clean and sober, I can't think of a single one. Because California does it on a tier system. You're either level one, level two, level three, level four. I was level three when I went in. I went in for a violent crime. I went in as a level three. I did good behavior, worked down to level two, and I got to go fight fire instead of being behind the wall in a cell. I got to go be one of those firefighters.
Yeah.
And
nice.
There's so many of those in California, and I'm hoping those guys take priority to get early releases. Because those are the guys
that want
nothing more than just go back to their family. They've learned a trade in there. They learned how to use chainsaws. They learned a work ethic. And they just want to be there for their family.
How much of it, Mike, is just growing up, maturing? You commit a crime when you're 19. And when you're
I was
35, you're a different man.
When I got arrested. I turned 18, fighting in court, and then got convicted as an adult. So that's a big part of it.
Is that what? I use this as a tongue in cheek, but I have met O.J. Simpson. Very nice man. He did not harm me in any way, shape, or form. He was a very nice man. But I think he killed his wife and Ron Goldman. So just because they're nice people, most of the time, there's something wrong that makes them go off and commit crimes. I truly believe that. I don't know if it's some gene or something like that. Do you ever struggle with that? You said you were committed a violent crime. You ever struggle with violence?
Oh, as a child, I was in and out of juvenile hall constantly. And then I went to big boy jail.
Yeah. But then you grew up.
That's when I learned, hey, there's actually consequences for your actions. But
you just matured a little.
I'm hoping they prioritize the level one and two offenders that are out there firefighting, busting their butts, learning a trade, working their tail off, and
sure.
have earned it. I'm hoping those guys get a.
I hope when they release these guys, they have a program for them to go get a job, because that's the hardest part, is trying to get a job as a convicted felon, and they shut the door in your face. So they got to help them with that. Anyway, I got to hit a break. But, Mike, thank you. I'm so glad you called. Interesting guy.
Your screener is the rudest person I have ever heard in my life.
You have probably the best call screener in radio.
You're with Tom Sullivan.
Well, we've been talking about the Sunday shows. We've also talked about California releasing 76,000 prisoners. Unbelievable to me. And 63 of those 76 were in for violent or repeated offenses. Shannon in Orlando. Hello, Shannon.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Hi. Doing great. What do you got on
good,
this? What
good.
Are you thinking?
I think the biggest concern I have is, how are they releasing them? Are they releasing them with jobs and a means to survive? Because most felons go back because they get out, they can't get a job. They are basically put into a world that's new to them if they've been in jail for, you know, decades and things. Sure. And that's why sure. they go and they commit other crimes. And that's why they end up back in prison. Because it's not like society is just, okay, you're a felon, so we're just going to give you a job, you know. And that, like I said, they end up doing different crimes, you know, just to survive and have a life out here.
I could not agree with you more.
With conditions.
I agree. There's if you check the they tried to get around this by making laws that say you can't ask all these questions about somebody you're going to hire. You know, it started off with simple stuff like how old are you? Are you married? You can't ask any of that stuff. But they, you know, they used to ask that. No big deal. But the whole thing about jobs is they try to get around it because they say, have you ever been convicted of a felony? And if you say yes, right. You know, you're gone. I'm right there with you. They need I used to know this guy years ago, and he had it was called Pride Industries. And Pride Industries, what this guy did was he built this thing. He hired people that had some sort of physical disability, cerebral palsy, you know, various things, and right. gave them jobs and gave them dignity because they could not get a job down at the regular whatever. And so he built right. this thing into where they had contracts with Hewlett-Packard and other companies. When you get something in the mail from there, you get a, back in the day when you get software mailed to you, all that was packaged by Pride Industries. Then he told me they're hiring ex-cons. And I said, whoa, are you okay with that? I mean, are people nervous about working next to an ex-con? And he says, no. He says, we screen them. But that's the point is that they you have to go to some place like that to get a job, to get a track record so that when you do that for a while, you can now go out and get another job because where have you been? Well, I've been working right. over at Pride Industries. No, it's a huge right. problem because if I can't get a job and I've got $200 in my pocket and that's all I know, and I used to make $1,000 a day selling drugs, I'm going to go sell drugs in about a week.
Exactly.
I can't survive.
Exactly. And we're releasing them into an economy where people are already struggling for jobs. So am I going to hire yep. an ex-con or am I going to hire a good law-abiding citizen that just needs to work? You know, it's not yep. even a condition to do something that drastic. It's you're right. Crime is going to go sky high because they're not going to have any other option. There
they
aren't
have
many
to have
that provide that.
They have to have some sort of handoff program or when they're out, that they will help them yeah. get gainful employment. Because with gainful right. employment, it will keep these guys and gals busy. And when they're busy, busy hands don't commit crimes.
Right.
As much.
But when they're sitting around idle at home, they're going to find out other ways to commit crimes. And that's just
absolutely.
Unfortunate but true.
Yep. I'm 100% with you. So do they have those programs? I doubt it. For 76,000 people, when you, like you said, we've got 8 million people that had a job a year ago and they now they don't. I don't see the chances of success being very high. And I hope and pray that these people that get released are grateful and follow the whatever they can to get out there and make an honest living. But I'm worried about it.
It's still scary.
I watched Shannon. I watch too many crime shows. I love crime shows. So being a former law enforcement officer, I've got a jaundiced eye for just about everybody. I'm looking at everybody like, it's a
right, and especially with people shooting up jobs and stuff like that, they're more worried about violent people being hired. You know. Especially knowing that they were convicted of a violent crime. I mean, you know, we don't want to discriminate, but this is the world we live in right now. You know, people are on edge
well,
about everything.
The lawyers would have a field day if the guy you hired shot up his fellow employees or your customers And they would say, and you knew this was a person with a violent criminal record. Yes. Just get out your checkbook.
Companies aren't going to take the chance. They're just not going to take the chance. They'll find some other way to do it, but they're not going to hire these people. So you're setting them up for failure, basically.
I think so. I think so. Anyway. All right. Once again, we're on the same page, Shannon. I always appreciate your call. How about Dennis in California? Dennis, hi, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Tom. My name is Dee, actually. I've called the show before. I'm out here in California. I've done time in the toughest California state prisons, Clinton, Corcoran, Folsom. And I'll tell you what, the general public ought to be scared to death. They're letting these homeboys out. Because I had breakfast and dinner with some of these guys, and I wouldn't even want to be on the other side of the street when these guys were walking down the road.
We just had a guy call that say he would let them take care of his babysit his house and his kids.
I heard what Mike said, and you want to know something? Mike don't know what he's talking about. I'm telling you, Tom, this state right here, state of California, isn't going to be worth two pennies to rub together when it all goes south. And they're going to go south a lot sooner than later. Them prisons are for a reason. And them's dangerous people in them prisons. Hey, my mom and dad are out here, and my son and my granddaughter. I shudder at the thought that they're letting these people out. And you can blame it right on old Gavin Newsom and the Democrat Party because they run this whole state. It's not a left or right thing. You're right.
You would think crime would not be a political issue. What were you in for? What'd you do?
I was a big drug lord back in the day.
You what?
I was a big drug lord back in the day.
Drug lord. Yeah. Well, I hear there's a lot of money in drugs if you don't get caught. Obviously. You got caught. All right, I got to hit a break. There's the other side of the story. Dennis, thank you. Who are you going to believe? Dennis or Mike? 855-295-6600. Be right back.